Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is Jordan Grace, and you're listening to the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
BWB, this is One Nation Radio. You better get it right. Rich Ladder, James Boyd came to give them life. The Blackest Wrestling Podcast has come to kick all ass and drop it 6 feet if they kicking trash. Word, let me welcome y'all to something different. And if you dig it, man, you should let some friends listen. We be getting it in this on the regular, dude. Ravishing flow, but this shit rule. See, James don't rap, so I had to break it down. The whole network, man, we coming for the crown. Raps in the columns, I keep them both covered. Making the beats too, so the listeners can bump it. Hit us with the rating, yeah, I'm saying it's a 5. Before you hit it, talk, bob your head side to side. It's One Nation Radio, and this is the beginning. It's Rich, and I'm here with James. It's time to listen to One Nation.
We got to unleash the power of the pyramid.
This is Mike Sempervivi from WrestlingObserver.com. Check me out on Wrestling Observer Live every day. And also check out your boys, Rich and James, on One Nation Radio.
Hi, this is Kenny Omega. We're listening to One Nation Radio. Check it out, guys. These guys know what's up. Big Kenny Omega fans. That's all that counts to me. Goodbye and good night. Bang.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of One Nation Radio. I'm James Boyd, and here with me I have Rich Latta. What's going on, man?
Oh no!
Yes.
I see our recording has gone the way of Ben Simmons.
Yes, bro. We recorded like
it did not show up.
We were like 20 minutes into an NBA playoffs section of this show, and then I look and I'm like, "How come Rich's like audio dropped out?" Look, go through it, start it back up. Still do mic tests. He still doesn't show up. Look through the settings. This dumbass app that I have just defaulted to your settings working every single week on a Monday or a Sunday decided, nah, use a setting where it doesn't pick up Rich's audio at all. So we have to start over. We're going to speed through the playoffs to get to our point we were talking about. Ben Simmons is a joke, a fraud. He has progressively gotten worse in the playoffs. Every single playoffs he's been in since 18. I'm sick of watching him let down Embiid. Embiid has done everything in his power to become the basketball player that he is, where he was the best basketball player when he was healthy on the floor this year. And we're at a point where we have to make these concessions to where Embiid, the best post offensive threat we've seen since maybe motherfucking Shaq, has to face up and be 25 feet away from the basket at times to get space for Ben Simmons' non-offensive ass. I'm sorry, I've been over this rant before. It was a lot more nice and concerning before. I don't have time for it because I'm pissed off that we lost his audio, so he's going to have to fill it. And he ain't the worst person he's had to hear this from this week or whatever else. So it is what it is. Sorry, Ben Simmons, but I'm not sorry. I want you off this fucking team. I want you playing somewhere else away from Embiid so Embiid can unleash his full potential away from your trifling ass. If I'm too harsh, I'm sorry. Shoot a basketball in a game when it counts.
Send him to the Shanghai Sharks.
My God. Maybe if he goes to a Euro League, he would actually get better. Think of how many guys we've seen in the NBA not make it, get drafted over else, take their ass to Europe, play them grown ass tough men, learn how to play in a way to make it work for themselves and come back. Maybe he will get a jumper if he was out there playing some of our Serbian brothers.
Man, yeah. Ben Simmons is doing shit I haven't seen since, like, LeBron melted down in the 2011 finals, and this may have been worse.
This was way worse. He wasn't afraid. He never shot 30% from the foul line. He never passed up dunks.
Completely just just absolute cowardice and, like, just, you know, I've been on this fuck Ben Simmons for about 2 years now, and this feels all really good, you know, to see the world finally arrive to the party. I don't think Ben Simmons, you are not a point guard. You need to go ahead and put PF next to your thing instead of PG, because this isn't the way to win. And I've seen people kill guys like Russell Westbrook for quote unquote sabotaging their team, like in ways that did, like, were never this is way more anything
offensive.
Like this.
This is way more offensive.
Like, this is ridiculous.
This is way more offensive. Way more offensive. Like, Russell Westbrook's issue is he plays so goddamn hard, and this, you can also say this for Blake Griffin in his prime. They play so goddamn hard that they have no gas, and the way that manifests is they make mistakes in the games because that's how it manifests, right? To where, like, they don't make sound decisions, or they turn the ball over, dribbling the ball off their foot, or they can't make shots, they have no legs. That is something you can live with depending on what kind of team setup you have. It just didn't work out for those two, right? Like, we were talking about the meltdown with Doc Rivers, and we'll get to that in the passing as well, but, like, that 2015 team, Blake was incredible in that playoffs. But you look at what happened at the end of that 2015 series against the Rockets, where it's like, these games were close. He basically emptied the gun in the first 3.5 quarters and had nothing left, and it was left on Chris's shoulders. And, like, that team was literally playing 4-on-5 on offense for all them years. Sometimes 3-on-5 until Blake finally got a jumper out to pass 12 feet. But with Embiid, it's a with Simmons, it's I have the ball. These teams are not threatened by any action ran off me because I can't short roll because Embiid's on the other opposite block. There's a big there to mess all that stuff up, and also he doesn't want to get fouled, so therefore he's not really going to go in there for real. Like is we're done. Like, you said take PG off his name and put PF. How about this? Put DS there and he is dunker spot. Like, he is he's basically at this point, like, I don't know, DeAndre Jordan except 6'10" with a handle. Like, he's that offensively useless.
My God. Like, I don't know what happened to him. Or what has happened to him over the years. He's just deconstructed to
that's the thing. That he's gotten worse progressively, like, every playoffs. Every postseason, he's gotten worse.
Yeah, man. It's stunning to see something like this. And he was the exact opposite of, you know, the other Game 7 we saw, where we saw dudes playing with their hearts, emptying the gun,
right,
going after it.
Right.
Meanwhile, Ben Simmons don't want none of it.
Like, bro,
he don't even want a dunk.
Like, bro, in that Game 5, when they lost, when they blew that game with like a 25-point lead in the second half, right? Like, Embiid had 37-13. What?
On a torn meniscus.
Right. That's another thing about this. Then he missed Game 1, and then has played 2 through 7 on the torn meniscus, and it's sensational for most of the series. Like, granted, like, I think you know, game four, he was really bad in the in that fourth quarter, whatever else. But it's like, hey man, like, this is a dude that has improved his game and expanded his game every year he's been in the league when he's been upright and healthy. Meanwhile, Ben Simmons literally has not expanded a goddamn thing. Since he's been in the league. Like, he's 24 years old. He was the first pick in what, 2016 draft?
15. Nope, 16.
2017 rookie, 18, 19, 20, 21. This is 5 years. You haven't improved in 5 years offensively?
You know who this sounds a lot like? But this man was never afraid to shoot the ball. Sounds like Tyreek Evans.
But, like, yes.
But you didn't have to tell Tyreek Evans to shoot.
Right. Right. This thing is, like, just at a point to where it's like, bro, you 6'10", you 240 pounds, you are the only person I have ever seen be able to literally wall off, stop, and control LeBron James moving at full speed. You are that kind of defensive talent and athlete, right? And that kind of body control and power with it. you get a baseline turn spin where you lose the ball for a split second, and you have a foot on the restricted line, and then you pass the ball to Tyball, who's on the other side of the rim with his defender between the ball and him, to get fouled. Dunk the fucking basketball. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, man.
Like, I heard his explanation is he's afraid Gallinari was going to, basically after he got behind him, was going to swipe from behind. Gallinari ain't did no shit like that. So he's tore his ACL in 2015. Stop it. Man,
I saw Gallinari and I was like, Gallinari's still in the league?
Right. Especially
like, he's on that level now.
Especially after how bad he was in OKC last year in that Rocket series. We're getting the side of a barn. I was really disgusted with Ben Simmons, and like he's somebody that I have like defended and thought like, you know, he'll figure it out eventually, but like after that game six, I was like, nope, wash my hands of him. He's fucked. It's a wrap. And then game seven, like to be on that, for them to win game six after blowing that lead, to run to win game six in a row, come back game seven, just to let the home fans down, get to the point at the end of that. And then for that play to happen is like, this is a crystallizing moment for that city, that fan base to know that is never fucking happening with that guy. Y'all need to move on. And the thing is, it's so funny that Philadelphia, a city that has booed, you know, people talk about how shitty Philadelphia is and saying in passing it to be funny when it's about how they booed Santa. How about the times them fuck niggas booed Michael Irvin after he got stretched off with a neck injury? These are terrible people. I'm sorry. For them, with the process, the way they were out here babying Markelle Fultz because he made free throws occasionally before they finally shipped his ass out of town.
Just
for them to
baby
Ben Simmons all them years, In a situation where he never got better offensively, you would see him and pick up open gyms with other NBA players. Like almost famously, like that same Ben Simmons jump shot reel in that gym was that same day where you had Devin Booker and Noah talking about getting double teaming Booker in open gym. Right, that's like one of those famous open gyms on Twitter the last few years. Right. For him to hit them shots there and be out here thinking that he's going to tease us like with the possibility that could happen in an organized basketball game. The fuck out of here. Boy. Get him out of here. I'm done. We're done.
That's doctor footage. That's doctor footage.
Get him out of here. Get him out of here. Send him to another team. Make him a power. Make him a big and whatever else. Like, for somebody to be that kind of defensive force to where he literally had Trae Young about to get clowned on Twitter for a whole week for how much he stunk up that fucking game, and then basically like nullify all the good work he did on defense by being completely just shooketh. Like, nah, we're done. Good luck for whatever team takes him for $140 million. It's a wrap.
I hate everything the Sixers have stood for the last half decade. The losing, the fucking dorks, the geeks, the spreadsheets, the draft, jiggery, and all the Sam Hinkie shit. Even though he's gone, their fans identified and identified themselves and bought into that. All that bullshit. It's over.
Rich.
Finito. Look, the Hawks did it. Have rebuilt themselves in half of that time while the Sixers were doing that shit, ruining these young guys' careers and turn them into fucking losers like Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor and all these dudes who have never lost coming to the franchise and they got their fans saying, oh, it's okay, we just gonna lose and not be competitive. Where's your heart at? Like, fuck all that shit. Like,
forget that part. Yeah. Forget that part, right? You want to rebuild and stink? Fine. Do it like how OKC is doing. They made the playoffs last year. They have half a million draft picks in the next decade.
Boy.
There were ways everybody understood. Like, that's the thing where that got annoying on Twitter when people were like, you're just not smart enough to understand. No, we all understand. We just think there are ways, there are extra ways between we're going to flat out tank for half a decade or close to half a decade, and
literally be anti-competitive,
right?
Like
to try to
serve your fans trash.
Like, you can absolutely go be a place where like we have some young guys and we will turn them over and we'll have like one veteran star and we'll stink for a couple years while we get all this draft capital up to start, you know, moving up drafts, getting the next disgruntled star, whatever else. That's what OKC is doing. No one's complaining about OKC. They made the playoffs last year while tanking. You could have done this. Like, there are ways to go. There are ways to help Miami Heat. They never tanked. They made the finals last year. There are always ways to do this besides just saying we're going to tank it out or whatever else. And the thing about tanking it out is, hey, bro, what are the odds you're going to actually draft the right people every single time? They didn't even do that even a third of the time. They got Embiid, and he was and he had a bad back, so
he fell to them at like what, three, four?
Three, I think. I think he went three or four. Okay. You're right. Right. He falls to them because if his back is healthy, he goes number one. Sorry, Jabari. Sorry, Andrew. You're not going first if he's healthy. Like, that was the secret thing about him. Is like, he had his bad back or whatever else. But whatever. We'll go past that, right? All you have to do is draft Mark. All you have to do is, with the first pick, draft Jason Tatum all you have to do is stay at the third with the third pick and draft a Jason Tatum. All you have to do. The way that Ainge fleeced them, bro, if Tatum is there, they've won a title by now. If Tatum is there, they would have won a title by now, right? If Jimmy Butler doesn't leave, they probably have won a title by now.
Look, Jimmy Butler knew. Look, I bet if we got a Jimmy Butler off the record interview right now, he'll tell you about Ben Simmons.
They didn't want to pay him.
Yeah.
You know,
how'd that work out?
You don't want to pay Jimmy Butler after he had a 40-point triple-double in Game 6 of the NBA Finals, one of the greatest games of the last decade. You didn't want to pay that guy. But what you will do is max out Ben Simmons and pay him $150 million for the next 5 years or whatever else. Look, we have seen people be afraid to be fouled. We have never seen people be afraid to literally hold the ball and breathe below the free throw line like him. Like, we've seen Blake Griffin in playoff games be afraid to be fouled, right?
Yeah, you can say that.
Especially early on. Especially like the 2012, 2013 years, like when Del Negro was still running around or whatever else, right?
Hell, Shaq didn't want to get fouled.
Rondo didn't want to get fouled in playoff games. They weren't afraid to be on the court and dribble the ball. This is now like our second segment, and we have basically.
I think this one was actually better.
I was just like furious. But all right, so I'm not even gonna go to the Doc Rivers thing. We talked about that. Whatever else, he's had a disaster in playoffs.
This is just the latest one. The title.
This is the newest one, and this one he went back to back with him, back to back.
Boy.
So, as far as moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Shout out to the Hawks for getting it done.
Yeah. So, you think this series I was basically dismissive saying, like, hey, man, I think the Bucks are going to smoke the Hawks. You think it's going to be competitive? We're going to see, bro. Like, I just don't think they match up well with them, especially as far as size. And, like, they have nobody. Nobody that can they can stop Giannis. Not a soul. I just. Well,
I don't think the Hawks is going to be trying to play to stop.
He ain't afraid. He ain't afraid to breathe while holding the basketball.
so yeah, like I just feel like the Hawks have like they've really introduced themselves. I think
yes.
This to this new like national kind of. Spotlight, you know, look at the teams that are left, and it's like a lot of new faces.
Collins is cool. Trey's cool. Herder got this for the rest of his life. He got that.
Oh, yeah. He's good in the A forever.
Yeah, he got it for the rest of his life.
The cool thing about them is like they haven't had home court advantage. They knocked the one seed off, so it's like they'll go into your building and play you and maybe beat you. So, like, you know, I don't think it's just this walkover for the Bucks, but the Bucks very happy that they made it this far. I you know, in some ways, I can't be sad that the Nets lost, because I some of the stuff that I thought the Nets was doing, like the way all these players tanked and like tried to get to that roster, like Blake Griffin, James Harden showing up out of shape and forcing his way to the thing. I didn't like it. Like, and I thought it was just, when I hear about people cheating the game, like that's what cheating the game feels like. Like you don't like, it's anti-competitive. It's all that. It's just like, they just thought all this shit was that easy. And maybe it is, but like, this is what's waiting for you on the other side when you come in heavy and all that. All of a sudden, you got to play yourself back into shape, and then them hamstrings don't fire up. Then you're doing all this load management or whatever, all these taking these games off, sitting out and everything, and then you waiting to fire up, and then, it just ain't there. You land the wrong way. And some of that stuff is maybe you can't really control it, but it all kind of looks funny when you add it all back up. Steve Nash, you know, just roll the ball out. Oh, you think it's that easy, huh?
I mean, it kind of was. Like, we're talking about like 2 inches on some big ass feet, and it's funny. Like, I didn't realize how big Kevin Durant's feet were, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, but whatever. Like, what I will say about that is, like, look, the Harden thing, he clearly tanked. I don't really care. Like, if this guy doesn't want to play there anymore. You don't want to play it anymore. Like, make the trade. Like, bro, they could have had. Word was Philly could have had Harden for Ben Simmons. Can you fuck?
Boy.
Like, God damn it. Like, if James Harden just. If they could just get James Harden for Ben Simmons, you pair that with Embiid and Seth Curry, you might have a title right there. Whatever. But I think the thing is, like, the Blake thing is different. Like, I feel that it's different. It's like, he was on this team. He's in fucking Siberia. He never wanted to be traded there. He got screwed over for being there anyway. He tried hard. He had injuries or whatever else. I watched with my own 2 eyes early at the beginning of the season, and, like, he looked more done than Westbrook did at the beginning of the season. So I was like, the fact that he was able to contribute anything in the playoffs is shocking to me. Now, people are saying that he's sandbagging and this and the third.
Of course, like, that man didn't dunk for 2 years.
Bro, he had so many surgeries on his lower half that is like, I think he just got healthy. Especially, think about Blake Griffin, what we've seen of Blake Griffin over the years. Like, I've never considered that dude to be a tanker. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but it's like, I've seen how hard that dude played in his prime. I saw how hard that dude was out there playing in fucking Detroit of all places when he was healthy. And then, like, he had just came back.
When it's time for you to try to get off a team, you know, shit get real different, you know.
So DeAndre called him and said, "Hey, bro, how about you you slide through?
Start laying it down." Okay. Yeah. You know, the calls were made. The Rock Nation had picked up the phone. You know, and say, "Hey, we know we're gonna try to get you because we can't let you go to the Clutch Sports." So, you know,
I think we'd be remiss if we don't talk about Durant.
Yeah, man.
I think that this last week was the best week of basketball.
All world.
I think this last week was the best week of basketball he's ever played. I don't think I've ever seen him better.
This man, off the Achilles, this man has defeated an Achilles injury. What? That's the craziest thing about it.
Sucks.
It sucks for him. You know, they tried to, you know, they tried to run a scheme for the championship, but, like, you saw, like, when that man was back against the wall, like, that man's heart is huge, and, like, he was just a fucking god on the court. Like,
that's the thing that was, like, when people got so upset with him joining the Warriors, like, I understood it. I just don't care. But I understood it. It's like, we all kind of know how fucking all-time great you are, guy. Like, it kind of sinks that you're also on the same team with someone that's also, like, another fucking alien. Like, I get it. It didn't bother me. It's like, whatever. Like, they're gonna be the best team I've ever seen, so, like, I don't care. But I get how people felt that way. But, like, the way people have discounted and discredited him as far as his worth as a basketball player these last few years because he was on that team. Like, I thought that, like, people would have let it go after he, you know, came back for game six and tore his Achilles.
And no, then that man stopped LeBron from winning rings. And then he's going to have to carry that forever.
And then he won another, and then he, you know, and then he goes to another team that's that turns to a super team, and they get mad at him again. And it's like, bro, like, I don't think y'all understand what you kind of see here. Like, I don't think we've ever had eight basketball talents ever in this sport as good as Kevin Durant. I don't think we have. He is that special. And, like, this past week was a glimpse of the stuff we thought that we could have seen, like, the last half decade. But, like, we saw it in a less potent dose at times. But, like, this was always within him. This is what we saw within him, like, back in, from what, 2011? So,
yeah. In this series, like, it felt like it was real competition. Like, there were, it was teams that...
This was his
two-way... That came up. It was like a team that has come up and did it, like, the right way, like, mm-hmm. with the Bucks and all that. And then you got your super team with the Nets, and then the Nets just start one by one kind of falling off, and Durant evens it out. And it's like, man, like, I feel like the real competition, like, has been missing in the playoffs, like, outside the finals, pretty much this whole last decade. So, like, this felt really good to watch.
Yeah. And, like... I just thought it was fun. And, like, to see, like, him and P.J. Tucker. And, like, that's the crazy thing about it is, like, P.J. Tucker and Chris Middleton are, like, if not for them, granted, he scored damn near 50 twice. So, like, I understand it's, like, well, they scored 50 on him. Do you watch the fucking game? They are exhausting that dude to get them buckets. And he's still just getting because he's incredible. He's maybe the greatest shot maker we've ever seen. So it's like, if not for Middleton and Tucker wearing him out the way they did throughout the game seven in those 48 minutes, like, Durant probably goes nuts in overtime and wins. He exhausted him to where he had nothing left in overtime. And I don't think that should be a shame. Or if you're someone that's saying that he didn't score any points in overtime, da 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 da, and makes him, you're a fucking moron. Look. You're more.
He went out firing. It wasn't like he didn't take a shot. It wasn't like there was nothing. He ran from it.
There was nothing left he had. Look,
it wasn't like he choked. Right. Like, even though he, like, airballed a shot at the end, I could really care less.
Right.
Like, at that point. Right. Like,
you're not supposed to make that shot, no way.
Yeah. And he made it just like 5 minutes earlier. Right. Like,
right. Like, One thing I'll say about this series that I drew, like, that game seven reminded me so much of, like, some of those, like, long main event championship matches we've seen over the years in Japan, where it's like, you know, the ones I love, like, look how desperate and exhausted these people are just trying to not lose. The will to win is so high. I love it. And to see, like, Giannis, like, he's about to fucking drop. Chris Middleton, like, Jesus Christ.
Man, for respect.
Chris Middleton is out there. I think he played like 50-something minutes of that game. After P.J. Tucker fouls out, he's the one that has to guard Durant. He's making buckets in overtime. Giannis is out here fighting his ass off, like posting up at the end of in crunch time, a fourth quarter overtime on the left block, which is like we know how hard that is to do, and he's still making shit happen, like. Jrue Holiday, after stinking for most of the game, making those three straight baskets in the crunch time. Harden's out there on one fucking leg playing like 51 of 52 minutes. Actually, I think he only missed like 30 seconds of the game. Like, all them dudes playing their hearts out. And then, like, to see Ben Simmons on the other side of the bracket with that bullshit. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. But yeah, man. Like,
you know what I just noticed? It's a lot of mama mentality dudes left.
Right.
You know, Book.
Yep.
Giannis.
Yep.
Trae Young.
Yep.
I can't think of no Clipper. Like, you know.
Oh, don't do that. It would be Kawhi. You know, don't do that. It would definitely be Kawhi. You know that. He's not in the series anymore. Do you think he tore his ACL?
That's what they said, but I don't know. That man always broke up.
Well,
so,
this is what they say. There's an ACL injury, but no one will confirm or deny whether or not it's an ACL.
Okay. If they lose the series, they'll confirm it.
No, but I mean, like, it's a ligament, so you can sprain your ACL. It's just normally whenever someone has a kind of has an ACL injury, almost it feels like 9 times out of 10 is like, nah, that shit just ripped. This shit's actually just torn. But yeah, it just, yeah, man. Like, I think that the I don't think he's coming back. I don't. Like when he didn't travel to I was like, like that's not
keep that man at home.
That's not like it's some long trip either. Like that is like, I mean, from hell, think about it. Like Chris Paul still owns his LA house. And he still lives in LA. He didn't move. Like he flies out every single time from Phoenix back and forth. Like that is. So for him to be like, nah, I'm making that trip, is like, that's kind of ominous. But yeah, man, like Devin Booker was sensational in game one against the Clippers. Paul George was also great in the first three quarters of that game. I think he ran out of gas from having to carry, which is like this weird thing where it's like, what is it with these, what is it with like somebody being a great player, which Paul George always has been a great player, but once you make them not the guy, and like mentally they know they're not the guy. Like when he's playing with Russell, or he's playing, or Westbrook, he's playing with Kawhi, that makes you like, I know it's to try to, you know, make it, make the team be better, but it's like, bruh, if y'all both gunning, if y'all both gunning, y'all gonna be better. Like, it's like, the only time I've seen it really work, really, where it's like, someone actually legitimately takes a back seat and it works out as like way, but like that was forced upon him because like his athleticism and his knees just clearly was just went on him after 2011. Like he had to make that concession. That concession was made for him by God. It wasn't like he's like, you know what, I can still do this. It's like, nah, bro. Like I kind of need to take a back seat. Like when Kobe didn't take no back seat. Obviously, he was younger and full of piss and vinegar and a mean son of a bitch. But
I think Steph took a back seat.
You could
on the court at least.
I feel like it's almost mentally he did, but like as far as like him always having the ball, he had the ball more than Durant did. I think ultimately, like, you might be right, but I think the thing is like between their team with the amount of talent offensively and skill they had was so above everything else. It was like, maybe he did. It didn't matter. It still just won. So, I'm trying to think. You know what? I'm going to say yeah, because, like, Durant was the one that mostly did most of the bailing out for them in their hardest series against the Rocks before Chris tore his hamstring. So given, like, when actually, like, shit actually hit the fan, it really was Durant. So, you're right. Now I'm thinking about it more. You're right. I never really thought of it that way because I'm like, who was really the alpha for that one? It's like, they both alphas. y'all getting swept. This shit don't matter. I'm just really excited for the series, for the Bucks. I'm really, and I think, what would be your finals picks? Mine right now would be Suns and Bucks.
I think I'm right there with you, Suns and Bucks. I can't ever pick the Clippers or anything. It would just go against everything, quite frankly. So I feel like the Bucks should be the favorites. I think they're the only team left that has been hardened through losses, and it feels like the old way, like they're breaking through each step to get a little bit closer, and then they finally get there. It feels like it's like kind of written like that, and a lot of new faces in these playoffs, which is a good thing. Because next this. Year, like the Lakers are going to come back, and then they're going to have to play some of these dudes that are, Warriors, you know, gotta come back tested. Too. Yeah, the Nets are going to come back. The Warriors are going to come back, and then, you know, this is what we call creating new stars, baby.
So I was thinking about this just earlier today. How pissed does Devin Booker have to be that, like, he very much is on that same thing with Kyrie, was like, great watch, great stats, bad team, start out your career. Are you a point guard? Are you not a point guard? Are you just a guard? Blah, 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 size, da, 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 da. Makes people decide that you are this set of that, right? And then it happened earlier, and then kind of same situation, like, obviously it's a bigger deal that LeBron ends up in Cleveland, but like Chris Paul ends up in Phoenix and the team is now very good. Like, Devin Booker has to, like, I think he signed a Nike. He has to have his own shoe in like the next 2 years, right?
Yes.
Like, them shit's going to sell like hotcakes. Like, his like, game is...
You know what?
And remember
might even get something like, more unique going for himself with the car thing. Like, you know, he's doing these things, pulling up all these old schools.
Oh, you mean
like,
you know,
whatever?
Oh,
he might get a commercial.
Oh, you mean being something. From? Oh, you mean acting like a person, like a young man from Mississippi, from a lot of money. You mean acting like himself? Yeah. Like I remember seeing him pull up the Staples, and he had an all black Grand National. I was like, huh? I was like, oh yeah, he's from Mississippi. Yeah, that'll happen. That happens. But yeah, I just I remember watching him early in his career years ago, and I was thinking to myself, like, you will see the numbers, you know, the 70-point game is when people will point to, but it's like, you'll watch him, and it's like, dude, he's special, but, like, he's on this bad team, and you were talking about how teams built, you know, you killed the process before, and you're like, this is a team that built the right way. Like, this is a team that got Booker, then got Ayton in that draft. That's now like, you know, Ayton went first, and you know that's in front of Luka and Trey. But it's like Ayton has now developed so much where it's like you just shrug, like oh, you know, like people will still clown like the Trey Luka thing. But it's like they traded out and they still got, and all three of these dudes gonna be all stars. Like, what? It's not like you draft the Darko or some shit, right? but. I just think that is really cool that, like, this team built this way. Booker was the first person there. Like, he was miscast, and he had to play point guard because of his size. And he was really a score first person with that range, with that handle, with that mid-range game. And then he gets Chris Paul. Ayton develops. In comes Crowder. Bridges gets better. Etuan Moore comes in, and, like, this team just fits so well together. Cam Johnson off the bench, like, this team fits well together. They're smart. And, like, I feel like, you know, depending on Chris's health, you know, going forward, because he's 36 and he's 5'11", like, this team can be a contender for the next two years or so, maybe 3 years, like, depending on how this all runs. Like, I think that he's that special of a talent. I always thought it was like, I understand we talk about people would have numbers on these shitty teams, whatever, but like, he looks like somebody if he was in the playoffs, he was never going to be scared. And like, he's been better than I thought he was going to be in the playoffs. So I'm super happy for dude. And like, they better get them shoes ready for that dude. That dude can make a lot of money for whoever, like, for Nike. He really could.
You know, it's real easy to do well for yourself as a star shooting guard and people like you. You know, because I don't think people ever really liked James Harden like that. So, like, there's money to be made.
There's no foul hunting. There's no foul hunting. Like, the game, like, it's a more aesthetically pleasing game. It just is. Like, is James Harden, I'm sorry, is Kyrie Irving better than James Harden? No. But Kyrie Irving plays a style that is easier to watch and more fun to emulate. It just is. Like, I think that James Harden has as big a bag as pretty much anyone ever in NBA history. But, like, the foul hunting is something that just pleases so many people and disgusts people. So, it's like, I get it. I get it if you don't want to wear no James Hardens. And also, like, Adidas ain't really made that many good basketball shoes as, like, the D-Roses, in my opinion. But, like, whatever.
I wouldn't even know what to do with somebody if they showed up in the James Harden shoes. I'd be like, so what do you play like? Like, so I can't expel no help on the defensive end? Oh, okay. Gotcha. Oh, you going to stand over there while the rest of us on offense and you ain't shooting this time? Okay. Gotcha.
Like, if you're looking through the Adidas catalog, you got to be out here looking for get the Dames before you get the Hardens, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Or the moon boots, you know.
The old Kobe's. Oh my god. You know,
the moon boots.
They did. Kobe should have left earlier. He should have left Adidas earlier. Buy out the contract. Oh,
I
mean, man.
I think it was a 7-year deal with them. I don't quite remember, but
Adidas out here making all the mistakes in the early 2000s. They were like, "Hey, this LeBron thing, we don't think it's gonna work. We ain't gonna give you no $80 million or whatever, $70 million, whatever it was." And then Nike was like, "Oh, word, here's this 90." The rest is history.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, I guess we're done. I guess it's not a time to talk about wrestling or this wrestling podcast. WWE Hell in a Cell in June this year. Oh, man. This show is a perfect encapsulation, in my opinion, of what we talk about seemingly like every quarter with WWE. These wrestlers, God bless them. They try so hard. They wrestle so hard. And then it's time for the executive producer, the show writer, to tell them to do stupid stuff that is off-putting to the fan base and makes everybody's effort feel like it was a waste of time at times. Like, that Charlotte and Rhea match was very good, and then that finish was stupid. The main event Hell in a Cell match was very good, and then it was such a deflating, cheap finish in a six-month feud. It was like infuriating. The only thing that truly was bad on this card, as far as the wrestling in the ring, was the Shayna and Alexa match. But like, you knew that before going in, that was gonna stink. So whatever. Hypnotism. Whatever. What are your general thoughts on the show, Rich?
I watched the first 4 matches, and then, you know, I had kind of heard about the other 2 matches, and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not subjecting myself to it. I'm not gonna watch this terrible DQ that just like makes no fucking sense, and they can't figure out who the good and the bad guy is in this feud. And apparently, the good guy is supposed to be Rhea Ripley. Whatever. Then to hear they're doing distraction roll up finishes in the Hell in a Cell, I was like, I'm not gonna do it. No, fuck you. then they have the fucking voodoo with Alexa Bliss, and she's forcing Nia Jax to slap the Reginald dude. I mean, Reginald normally in a way, so.
She was doing the arm stomps and all arm stomp. You saw it. I said arm stomps. The arm stomps. You watched it. So it's like she is basically like working her over and beating her up, and then she's like selling it and no selling. And then Shayna's like, "Oh, you know, so that. All right, how about I break up the next joint you have?" Like, she just kept going. She kept going. Like, I will go piece by piece on your arm until I eventually get you to sell, and I can win. And then eventually, what happened? She was undone by the show writing, by the script, like. I'm sorry. I feel bad for Shayna too.
It seemed like it was the story of this fucking storyline sucks. These wrestlers looks like they tried to save it,
yep.
And then the finish came,
yep.
And then it was bullshit. So it was like the video package would be fucking confusing and weird. The work is okay to whatever, and then the ending's just like, oh, so we can go through it. I guess we can go. Yeah. Can we start with the good part?
The first hour. The first hour was very good. Yeah. The first 2 matches. The first match is the SmackDown Women's Title Hell in a Cell match between Bianca Belair and Bayley. It got a little silly at the beginning, but they kept once you got the story for me, or at least for me, like once they were doing some silly stuff, and then like they got to the story of they keep messing with. You know, start doing the HBT, the hair based tactics with Bianca and Bayley, and hair control and then tying up the hair into things and then thwarting Bayley as she's trying to, you know, get advantage of the fact that she tied her hair up. And then by the end, you get braid control and then, like, she's wearing her ass out. I thought the ending was a little too cute where it's, you know, she teased like she's about to do the KOD to Bayley on the ladder. She, you know, Bayley ducks or Bayley rolls, and then Bianca anticipates that she lands. She basically rolls off, rolls through to her feet, and then hits a flip senton onto Bayley, who's still on the ladder, and then KODs her on the ladder. I thought they could have just did the KOD right there, or just ended on the 450 splash on the ladder, and that could have been fine, but. I mean, that's kind of nitpicky. I thought that, generally speaking, it was a good match. It was a very good match. A damn good match. I think I may have given 3¾ or 4. I don't remember. I have to look.
Yeah, I thought it was more smart than spectacular.
Yes. This was definitely different from her match against Sasha last year. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's another good win for Bianca, who's mm-hmm. like, if you like the Bianca Rhea race is just fascinating. Like, seeing is how Bianca's pretty much got Sasha and Bayley to work with, and they gave Rhea Asuka and Charlotte to work with, and it's like we're getting dramatically different results, I feel like.
I feel like a lot of it is one, they know what to do with one, the other one they have no clue. Like, they don't know if they want to make her a heel or a face. And with Bianca, it was like, she's a face. She's this. Like, she'll be a heel eventually, but she's a face, going to move her, make her the top face of the women's division. And, like, knowing what the fuck you want to do kind of helps.
Yeah. I was a little flabbergasted by the video package and the storyline going into it.
It's lame.
It was just weird.
It was lame.
But I think they wrestled about as good as they could to get around that. Bianca Belair kind of gave me a vibe, if she keeps doing more of these Hell in a Cell matches, maybe she could be like the Undertaker of women's Hell in a Cell matches, just because she's like strong and tall and can throw people around and shit like that. I think that may be a good way to go with her. But it's so funny because she like be smiling but be whooping ass and shit, so it's funny.
I'm gonna edit this off before the Sasha fans come for you, so just let you know.
Like, well, you know, just physically, you know.
So
like,
no, okay. So somebody has to be the Undertaker of Hell in a Cell. Someone has to be the Triple H Undertaker. Meaning, like, they both the two people that did the shit the most. Like, if you want to say that one of the, without deciding which is which, you want to say like the two most prolific Hell in a Cellers. Sure, but don't come out here saying that. Like, don't come out here saying that Sasha ain't the one for Hell in a Cell. They'll come for you
if it's. If it's anybody that has been a Sasha Banks stand on this show, it's been me. So
I know. I'm just trying to make sure they won't catch you lacking. That's all.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure they will. You know, try to come and take it out of contest. But check the archive, hoes. So you know. yeah, man. So Bianca, another you know. Victory gets the job done. You wonder what's next for her. She kind of cut a promo that alluded maybe Bayley is still next. I don't know why or how, seeing as how Bayley got this title by simply laughing after she had already lost to this woman. So who knows? Hopefully there's like, you know, maybe like, can we just get a placeholder opponent or something? Like, I don't know. But
how about we get a build that seems? How about we get a build that doesn't seem to just be like infantile for Bianca? Like, the Sasha one was you're a rookie, and this one is.
Oh, these are all very grade one by the book, first time champion style things. There's nothing that's like grabbing you by the throat what Bianca's doing.
Like, my thing is like, I don't know if you necessarily should show these video packages because it makes her look less cool. She was in the opener, right? Yeah. Just bring her out, have the match, and let the match go on, because nothing really tied back to that video package you show. Obviously, you know, it's a time fill, but like, if it makes if it makes the person you want to get over less cool, don't show it. Just run the match and let the match impress the fans. Because the match on its own was impressive enough to be like, yeah, Bianca and Bayley are both that deal.
Yeah. So yeah, we can go to the next match. Seth Rollins and Cesaro. Thought this was fine, but you know, I've my rule is I've seen a million Seth Rollins versus Cesaro matches, and I just don't care about them. Another goofy video package between Seth Rollins and Bayley. I don't know who's more annoying.
It's like they're running the same gimmick, except like one's for the women's division and one's for the men's division.
Yes.
Like, do you see the part like during the video package where like they're together during Bayley's thing and they're both
sounds
doing
like
the laughing
from hell.
It's like, yo, it's just like that is
sounds like the segment from hell. Like, yeah.
Like between Bayley allegedly being the person that with the promos that carried the industry and Seth with the drip game is like, yo, these two characters, like, they're living off their rep. Like, they got fans based off the work. They're living off the work they used to do, not the rep, not what they are doing right now. I'm only talking about like on the mic. In the ring, they're still both going. To a certain degree, like obviously Seth ain't been what he's been, or compared to 2018. But like this is a quality match. I thought that this is underrated on the goofy finishes aspect of the show, not the fact that who won or who lost, but like for Cesaro to get to the end of this match by doing the spin, slapping on the sharpshooter. Seth goes to the rope or gets to the ropes, fights to the ropes. Cesaro says, no, you don't. Crossface. Another reach. Roll all the way back to the middle of the ring. Set back up for the sharpshooter in the middle of the ring. Seth goes to reach with the right hand. Cesaro then grabs the right hand and then starts stomping it to the mat, to the canvas, the right arm. And then from he's stomping on his arm 2-3 times, Seth is screaming bloody murder and grabbing his shoulder like it's coming out the socket, to Seth grabs the back of his head with the left arm and then hooks into a inside cradle and then hooks the leg with the bad right arm and is with the right arm able to hold him down for 3 seconds. I was like, wait, why did he just stomp on his arm if he's strong enough to still hold him down then? What the fuck? That's weird. That's like, I thought that was goofy.
This loss or that pinfall was a way to send Cesaro out of the singles division. So, James, I'm going to ask, who's Cesaro's next tag team partner?
Big E, maybe. but my thing is this: if you want Seth Rollins to beat Cesaro, curb stomp him. Fine. If you want to continue the feud for TV with that finish, fine. Don't stop his arm. How do you hold a grown man down after you just with one arm after you just beat that arm up? I thought y'all said that y'all have psychology and tell stories.
That's
a poor one.
Yeah. I'm. I don't know. It's hard for me to care. Like I feel like Cesaro has been like they gave him that little push to heat him up to have the title match. Now they're sending him back right down the way he came up through Seth Rollins.
I understand the Jadeness, but like that is good booking. Like you want someone to get a title shot, you build them to get a title shot, and then if you're not making them a champion, you beat them and then you move them back down from where they were. Like that's promotions do that for a challenger.
No, I'm saying that because these people thought Cesaro was about to be a main eventer.
Those people are, you know, those are people that are what's the word, sycophants, you know, apologists. Nah, man.
Yeah, man.
I have too many war wounds.
I've seen this movie.
To believe that. Yeah, I've seen this movie before. It's on a cold day.
Yeah, ends with a cold day, exactly.
Yeah,
and then
I ain't falling for the Alexa man in Bliss, telepipe.
Alexa Bliss versus Shayna Baszler. My God, I don't even know what I saw in this. I saw hypnosis. I saw voodoo. I watched a video package and I was utterly baffled. Like I saw her earlier in the show in a pre-tape. Alexa is on a swing, and I'm like, what? I like, this is my first time actually seeing the gimmick, like, in, like, you know,
really
watching the show, not seeing it, clips of it on Twitter or whatever. Gotcha. This is just like the presentation, how they want you to see it or whatever, right? And I'm just like, so she's not a child? That's what y'all are like saying? Like, no, this is a child.
No, she's a child, and because she's dressed as a child, a number of scumbags are throwing views at this because they're pedos on the low, and like, this is problematic. It's hella problematic, and like, look, we've been pointing that out since, and everyone's been pointing out since day one, but people don't want to listen to it because like, they just want to be creeps.
They'd be like, so we're the ones that are the issue, not the WWE for like putting this out, not the actual, like, I don't know. It all looks fucked up. Let's just say that.
Like the whole thing is like, if you wrote out that storyline in a vacuum, it's like, okay, so we're gonna put an adult woman who is small, and like for years have had like a lot of the males in the fan base like gawk at her because of her petite she is, then dress her up as a girl, and then like the YouTube numbers run. It's like, I'm kind of disgusted with the fan base, to be honest with you. the company's already made that concession, so it's like, and I did you expect them to do better? Like, they do shows in Saudi Arabia, but like, come on, like, this is awful, and like, anyone trying to defend it is like, yo, bro, like, y'all, I don't rock with you. I just don't. If you were listening to the show and you were on this Alexa Bliss as a child vibe, hey, bro, kindly like press stop or pause on your device and delete this podcast and like unsubscribe, because I don't want you to support us.
Like.
No disrespect. If you go on that side.
This Alexa Bliss stuff, I feel like we need to make sure there's not a blue dot on your home. You know.
Oh my god.
I need to check and see if, you know, make sure there's no registry involved with your name. You know. This was trash. Just the lowest of the low.
Is the Fiend gonna win? Yeah. Like, is the Fiend gonna win back to back for 2021 on our put him in a coffin? Is he gonna win back to back years? Is they going to win because now the Fiend is also
Alexa. This is, it looks like they maybe running away with it.
Bro, worst WrestleMania match possibly ever, and then like the worst match in this pay-per-view. Like, the Fiend is just worst gimmick.
Bro,
one of the worst gimmicks of all time.
It's like we've been, you know, it's like somebody told y'all this. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Another in the infinite chapters of Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens.
Is it weird that like, I've seen them wrestle a lot more, or at least I feel like I've seen them wrestle a lot more than Seth and Cesaro, and like, I'm finding them more interesting to watch.
Yes, infinitely. I wish that they would make Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens do all the gimmick matches. Like, you know, when you pull up SmackDown, Know Your Role, and then you go to match types, and there's like all of them in the big wheel. Like, they need to do all the match types. We need to see Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens in a casket match.
They need to bring out that Johnny Gargano gimmick wheel from Halloween Havoc from last year.
We need to spin the wheel, and every week they do a new gimmick match. Hell in a Cell, casket match, ladder match, out of three falls, submission match, I quit match.
So
everything.
So word is, or at least I heard that something along the lines of like, this is on the borderline of almost being a Hell in a Cell match. And they decided to go with Bayley and Bianca. So, I mean, it is whatever. Eventually we'll get one in a couple years, eventually between those two. Really enjoyed the match. The story where they were telling with Buddy Thorne, the tongue and spike or whatever else, 2 days before, so twice in the
on Nigerian neck. Nail.
It's a tongue and spike. Like whatever. Same shit. Like
Nigerian nail.
Sure, the Nigerian nail. I'll be sure to remember that when next time I watch what's his name? Commander Aziz.
Commander Aziz.
I'll be sure to remember that next time I watch him wrestle. He's selling the effects of the Nigerian nail. I almost call him Nigerian Nightmare. That's Kamaru Usman. But so once he hit him with the double N, he was selling this move. So or hit him twice, so he was selling it. So like he went into a weakened state. There's a part in the match. Do you think he was actually hurt? He hurt his arm on that dive from Sammy catching him? Because I thought for a split second, like, oh, he got me. He actually got me.
Yeah, I think he's just a great seller.
Yeah. Match continues. They start working on his arm. They get to a point where they start beating the crap out of each other with headbutts and forearms and fists. And I think he's working over his arm at one point. And he ends up getting a free spot and with his corner kick and ends up getting the win. And I think that was like the first time Sami Zayn is like, I think it's like his fourth win in like 3 years or some shit like that in a singles match.
Wow. I heard Sami Zayn hadn't won a match since like October or some shit.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying like this is also like his fourth singles win in, like since in like 3 years, some shit like that. Remember like when he came back from the end from 2018 when he came back, and he remembered like he was doing all that jobbing and doing the Vince McMahon, anger therapist stuff, and then the anger therapist basically being his voice, his sounding board for his disgust for the fans, and then he did that Lashley thing with John for Lashley with Max Caster, and like he was, you know, they put him on tag teams and made the IC champion, and then like he never beat anybody while doing that stuff though, like the match he would be winning would be like multi-man matches and tag matches.
Yeah, man. Yeah, take it away. Charlotte versus Rhea.
Oh, man. Charlotte versus
was
Rhea.
Was this what Triple H was talking about when he had to pay off in the back pocket?
Hey, this finish actually does play into that.
How?
I'll explain it. If you go back and watch their match from WrestleMania, WrestleMania 36, Charlotte eventually hurts her. They beat the shit out of each other. Charlotte hurts her leg, slaps on the figure eight, and she taps out. The finish of this match is she gets her leg at a certain point, and then slaps on the figure eight. Rhea makes the ropes and drags both of them out to the floor, gets by the table, and basically takes a lame DQ like Charlotte would take a lame DQ defending her title. It's not a good story. Didn't say it was a good story. But actually plays into furthering this feud. I thought that if this match had a finish, it's been a very good match. I thought this finish was super lame. This is some shit that's out of like a bad Raw. A bad episode of Raw. And you say the same thing for the main event finish, where it's like, yo, these two finishes for these last two matches were awful, and these two people, and these four people are working their asses off. And this was like, Charlotte and Rhea just have good chemistry. They just do. They've always had it. But, like, this was a match that Rhea really needed after struggling with Asuka in singles form, starting out the box. And, like, they had a very good match in the ring. And then Vince said, undo it. Undo all of the good work you just did for what you worked for 14 minutes to do. It was an awful finish. And at the end...
What's up with this gif I'm seeing getting passed around? Charlotte kicking the air like it was a video game test or something.
She went to kick twice from behind. She's facing the hard cam. And I don't know if Rhea moved or whatever else, but Charlotte like kicks twice and both times doesn't connect.
Yeah, it looked very bad.
Oh, it did.
But
it did. Like if you only saw that GIF, you thought they had like some like 1.5-star match.
Yeah.
what a terrible finish.
Especially if you're someone like us, there's like
they just announced the match is happening again next month on pay-per-view. I'm like, fuck you. Like,
right.
I just
right. You gave us a 14-minute title match and you fucked us. And now you say run it back out there. No. Especially for like something that's not super heated either. Like, I don't say they had the pull apart thing or whatever, but it's like nobody
trying
thinks
to heat this feud up. Nobody cares,
baby. Nobody thinks this is AJ Styles going for the double count out with Samoa Joe after he calls out Wendy. No. This is not the same thing. It's not that level of heated to where I need to see this again. No.
It just feels like they're on the countdown to give Charlotte the belt back because they had Rhea, from what I hear, do the DQ thing, then do her fucking move at the end and stand tall. And it's like, didn't you beat Charlotte?
So about that. She hit the ripcord earlier in the match and it was right next to the ropes. Charlotte put her either foot on the rope or her arm or grabbed the rope. I forgot which one, but that was right before they got to the finish part where the figure eight happens, because Rhea blew her stack because she didn't beat her with a move. And then at the end, after they fought, after the fuck finish, she hits her with a move. Like, yeah, not good. Not good. Really bad finish. Really bad finish. But not the worst finish on the night. Not. Because we're about to get to it. WWE title Hell in a Cell match. To champion Bobby Lashley versus the challenger Drew McIntyre. This is the culmination of a 6-month program that started in January of this year.
It did?
Yeah. When did Miz cash in Money in the Bank?
Elimination Chamber?
Was it Elimination Chamber? Or was it before? Was that for Rumble?
No. It might have been Fastlane.
Okay, so maybe 5 months. 5 months, whatever. 4 months, whatever. MVP and Bobby Lashley strike a deal with Miz to help Miz cash in Money in the Bank so that Miz will then have to face Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley becomes champion after quickly dispatching Miz because Miz was a pretty joke champion. And you have Drew McIntyre chasing after his title from that point forward, from before WrestleMania all the way to now, we're in June. And Drew lost his rematch at lost his match at WrestleMania for the title. He didn't get pinned. Braun Strowman got pinned at the last pay-per-view. And then he was number one contender. He lost the number one contendership to Kofi with the help of MVP, and then got it back to get his last shot with Bobby Lashley and Bobby Lashley said to him, "This is your last chance. Once I beat you, we're done. You can never face me for the WWE Championship again." Drew says, "I'll agree if we have it in Hell in a Cell." And then after they beat this living shit out of each other for 25 minutes, something like that, they end it where the top babyface in the promotion. that's what Drew McIntyre is, correct? The top babyface in the promotion, right?
I mean, I feel like I keep seeing more and more things about how people are tired of him and they want to move the fuck on. And I'm just like, what did Drew McIntyre do to y'all?
I've still weighed. Is there another baby face that's a bigger baby face than him in the promotion right now?
I would say no.
Okay. The top baby face in the promotion loses in a 25-minute championship blow-off main event match on a pay-per-view by having his foot grabbed by the fucking ref, or sorry, by the ops manager, and he turns his back to the op, and then the op schoolboys him for the 1-2-3. That is such a lame finish for a program that you've built for months.
Nothing fucking matters.
And bro, like they did so they beat the shit out of each other. I would seriously suggest going back and watching that match. It's a 4-star match. I said go back, watch that match, watch the dude. Okay, so you know how they talk about like who was a baseball scout that talked about how Bo Jackson, like the time of the ball hitting his baseball bat, he only heard that kind of sound come off a baseball bat 2 times ever. The Negro League player Joe Gibson and Babe Ruth, and then Bo Jackson. Those are the 3 people you ever heard
all,
that kind
all
of
all three brothers.
Right. God damn it. So anyway,
James, how do you celebrate Juneteenth?
Watching NBA basketball. The sound of Bobby Lashley cracking the kendo stick across the traps of Drew McIntyre, they sound unlike any other kendo stick shots I've ever heard. They didn't crack, they thudded. And then I'm thinking, like, these are light shots. What's going on? And then you see McIntyre's back. And it looked like he got sliced the fuck up by Freddy Krueger. And I'm just like, yo, I thought he was hitting him light. No, he's hitting him harder than I've ever seen anyone get hit with these things before. And I just didn't recognize because it sounded different. Yo, I really enjoyed the match. Those two worked really well together. Another instance of Drew McIntyre just doing God's work.
Everybody hates him. I don't get it.
He's been on top too long. He has no edge. WWE's bad at babyface characters. Yada, yada, yada. I get it. I don't care. Like, the dude comes out every big match, and works his ass off and has a great match every single night. Every single pay-per-view. I don't care.
Y'all don't like him? Let him go.
Yeah.
Like, let him come to AEW.
I love to see him wrestle John Moxley. I love to see him wrestle Kenny Omega. I love to see him wrestle Phoenix, Pentagon, Eddie Kingston, Pac. I love to see him wrestle them dudes.
Everybody's just so down on this guy. I don't get it.
Him and Roman Reigns are the two MVPs of this company so far this year. I'm sorry. I watch all the big shows of y'all shit. What are y'all talking about? Like, understand, you know, Raw is Raw. It's going to be 3 hours. It's going to suck. It happens. I understand that SmackDown is going to be the same thing you see every single fucking week for 2 weeks, for 2 hours every Friday. I understand that. But Roman Reigns, if Drew McIntyre had big matches, them shits go off. I'm sorry. Depending on the level, do they go off on the level of some New Japan shit? No. Do they go off on the level do they go off to the level of main roster, main event, big match wrestling historically? Absolutely. I'm sorry. Those are the two. If you're tired of them, turn the fucking show off. Like, if you are tired of the Horsewoman and Asuka and Bianca and Rhea and the Big Dog Roman Reigns, I'm sorry, the Tribal Chief Roman Reigns and the Irish, whatever they're naming, Drew McIntyre, I'm sorry. If those are the people that are bothering you on this show with the effort that they give out, turn off the fucking show. What are you watching for? Because everything below them all fucking stinks to some degree. Aside from like Rey Mysterio here and there and a few little acts here and there. Everything else is way below the bar. Sorry. I watch this shit every single week. It's always the same names that are having the best matches or doing the coolest things that I see.
Yeah, I just don't give a fuck about this company. So...
And that's fine, but I'm saying like the people that say this stuff or whatever about they're tired of somebody that's, you know, tired of Drew McIntyre, tired of Roman Reigns, tired of whatever else, like, hey bro, who's doing better than them? Not saying that someone couldn't, but who's doing better than them? Are they fucking up right now? Are you tired of them? Like, that's watch a different promotion.
They can't be bothered to do that.
I watch the promotions. I don't get. All I do is watch the pay-per-views and the big matches that come through on TV that I hear to go watch. My relationship with WWE main roster is so much better than it was 3 years ago. So much better. 4 years ago. So much better.
Man. Incredible. Yeah.
I don't know. Overall, up and down. You know, those finishes stink.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's gonna stick with people. You know, yeah. The last thing on the show, and this wasn't just the last thing; it was the last two things on the show. So,
and I think there was an all time awful match and another shitty finish on that show. Yeah.
Yeah. So Friday night, so at AEW Dynamite. Very interesting opener. We got the MMA cage fight between Hager and Wardlow, and this thing was a blast. It was serious. They did it to where it felt like a really big match. It was fucking comedy at certain points.
Oh God!
And they took it serious too. So they played it like straight throughout, like the entrances. They showed the split screen, you know, when they first came on air, like Hager and Wardlow all walking out. They had Spears as Wardlow's cornerman. Jericho was Hager's. They came out, kind of played it straight in the first round. Like they were, you know, throwing blows and attempting submissions and takedowns and stuff. It was worked MMA, but it was fun. So,
fine by me.
The second round is when it all gets like fucking crazy. Like there's a part where Wardlow gives Hager the fucking Seth Rollins buckle bomb into the fucking cage. I fucking howled when that happened. Wardlow then gave him a hurricanrana and then speared him or whatever. So Wardlow's like shoeless, Hager's in full fight gear or whatever, and it's really entertaining and really fun. I loved the presentation of it. It was just them doing something different. They had a real octagon out there. So it wasn't like some fake like fence or whatever.
So it was the Lion's Den.
Yeah, it was not the Lion's Den.
Oh, it wasn't. Okay.
Nah, they had a real, like, you know, it looked regulation, you know. So eventually Hager got the triangle choke applied. And he ended up getting a submission because obviously he can beat Wardlow because Wardlow's not a fucking MMA fighter. So that it all breaks down pretty much. The shit was fucking hilarious between rounds. Jericho is advising Hager, and it's like, what the fuck is Chris Jericho telling you what to do in an octagon? Like, I don't, you know.
I'm sorry. I know this is an audio medium. I when Rich said that, what is Jericho gonna tell him to do? I literally raised my right elbow and pointed my left, like hit him with this juice effect. Get him. Bro, the fuck out of here.
That's funny. So
it all beat that man down. With an MMA finish.
Yes.
Yes.
It all breaks down. So like after the submission, like Spears attack Hager, and then Jericho jumped in the octagon. They have a big brawl. MJF runs out and he attacked Jericho's elbow. He puts him in the submission or whatever, because Jericho's still wearing the fucking thing or whatever. Dean Malenko came out to stop the fight. MJF punched Dean Malenko
Still using Dean Malenko?
Dean Malenko out here, and then Sammy Guevara's music played and he ran out. He hopped over the octagon, and then they announced Sammy Guevara and MJF for next week.
So why has it, now that this is the second time they have used Dean Malenko as a, you know, a bit of a hostage or collateral damage, right? When is Inner Circle or Tony Khan gonna pay for that man's like security or protection?
Okay,
because you can't be letting that dude like use you as like emotional ransom all the time like this.
So Malenko ran out with others to break it up. Or whatever, and he just happened to get caught by MJF.
So what I'm saying is Tony Khan need to pay, or Inner Circle need to pay for his security, so that like this no longer keeps happening to where the Bayface get their asses whooped. I'm tired. After watching WWE, I'm tired of hearing about Bayface getting their ass whooped. I watch that once a month. This is the second time they've used this man.
Well, I got some more news for you. So there was a 2-on-1 handicap match. Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, they fought Darby Allin. And Darby Allin.
Yeah, this Sting told him he told Sting not to show up, right?
Yes. So basically, Darby fought these niggas, like, and you almost thought he was going to win. But at the end, like, you know, it was too much. Like, they fucked him up. They put him in the. You know, the Razor's Edge move that Ethan Page uses,
that shit looked disgusting because it was like he threw that man a million feet in the air and just like fucked him up. I think Men of the Year are clicking because they actually have a name now. It kind of, you know, there has, I think they have like a little aesthetic, like they're shit eating bad guys. After that
combined weight, how much was their combined weight? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I would imagine would
it
it's
be,
like,
would it be 4 or 5 times more than Darby?
Oh my God. It will be 3.5 times more than Darby. I would imagine. Fair enough. So, Orange Cassidy got a win over Bononi of the Wingmen. So the Wingmen were out there. I always liked the Wingmen. So, they did a Jungle Boy and Kenny segment. So, Shit was fucking hilarious. So, Jungle Boy was backstage. He was getting interviewed by Alex Marvez, but Kenny Omega walked up. Don Callis and Nakazawa, they pulled up in a golf cart, and Kenny came, you know, kind of dressed normal. So he wasn't wearing like his expensive clothes. He just kind of had like a he had some shorts on or whatever. And he said, Jungle Boy, what's up? You know, why don't we just, you know, go ahead and run it right now and backstage. And then Jungle Boy was like, you know, I prefer to, you know, fight you next week or whatever. And then Kenny said, hey, free punch, you know, gave him the setup or whatever. But Michael Nakazawa then attacked him with the laptop and Kenny beat his ass. And Omega and Callis escaped on the golf cart. And the funny shit was Michael Nakazawa tried to get in the golf cart with him, and Kenny like used his foot and kicked Nakazawa out of the golf cart and drove off.
So they still got Nakazawa out here dressing like an IT guy.
Yes.
All right.
And that man's an assistant.
I need to see the video of this man kicking him off so they can get away faster. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
You gonna weigh us down, baby? Like, nah. Stay in this ocean. Yeah. We got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, so I then nodded off slightly. So, you know, these 10 o'clock dynamites, and this was after I got my jab on Friday or whatever. So I was like, you know, I'm a little sleepy. So I wake up at the very end of the Cody and Brock Anderson against Factory match. I didn't really see much of Brock Anderson, but he ended up getting a win over Aaron Solo. So up next, Andrade El Idolo had a sit down interview with Jim Ross. He said he chose AEW because there are many stars, but he's a superstar. He talked about the championships in AEW, talked about the TNT title, world title. Said he's working with Vic Guerrero because she's experienced and she's a Guerrero, so they have a great connection. But we have to wait because they have a surprise or whatever.
Was a surprise that Charlotte was going to do the double moonsault and then the kick spin back elbow?
I hope not, because she does it a lot worse.
That double spin, yeah, it was not smooth, that double moonsault. But the spin back elbow was actually there, though. I wanted to start doing hammerlock DDTs.
Damn.
Look, I'd rather see her do that than that, what's it called? What's her flip spin move? Cutter,
natural selection.
Which one? Hammerlock DDT or natural selection? Come on now.
Well, you know, the DDT might be like taken in the women's division. You never know. So,
By Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, you know. So,
The Fiend.
So Hangman accepted Hobbs' challenge for Saturday. So that Saturday is Omega and Jungle Boy, Hobbs and Hangman. Or two big matches.
Is it me, or does it seem like this coming Saturday show is more loaded than the previous shows?
Yes.
Okay.
Saturday has an 8 o'clock time slot, so it's almost like a regular week, but not all the way. So these last 4 weeks, like, I think they were solid, but they weren't like they were experimenting. They're putting new people in spots to try shit. Like the next match, we got Penelope Ford versus Julia Hart. So Julia Hart's been from AEW Dark. She's with the Varsity Blondes.
Oh, the cheerleader woman. Okay.
Yes. Penelope Ford ended up getting the win. Wasn't anything too bad. It was all right.
How is Julia Hart from what you've seen of her so far?
She's fine. She's like 19.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So, okay. And she may not
have that much experience either. So,
well, 19, like if she was in Japan, she would have tons of experience.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't think she's been at it for that long. So, so this part pissed me the fuck off. So, Britt, I think I don't know what the fuck they're starting her title reign off with, but Britt and Rebel are doing an interview, but Vicky interrupts them. She's not happy because she wants the title around Nyla Rose's waist. Baker and Rebel pretty much just laugh Vicky off, and then Vicky was like, "What you laughing at? Like, I brought Andrade to this company, and Tony Khan told me like he owed me a favor, so I was able to book myself a match. So it's going to be Britt and Rebel versus Nyla Rose and Vicky Guerrero for next week. I don't know if this is a swerve, but I don't even care. Why are you advertising Vicky Guerrero to wrestle?"
Okay, so currently, if I'm wrong, the last time that Britt and Nyla Russell was eliminated, right?
Yes.
And Nyla won, right?
Yes.
I don't know, man. You think they're actually going to build to? Are they actually building that, and this is the way they're doing it to build time, or what do you think?
I think eventually we're doing a singles match where she gets that win back.
Right, that's
but my, yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know what the fuck this is though.
Something a way to get to it without beating either one of them.
Yeah,
like they'll be rubbing on a heartbeat. They don't care.
They
at least I think they don't.
I forgot to mention at the end of the Penelope Ford and Julia Hart thing, Miro came out and he asked Penelope Ford where Kip Sabian is, and he mocked Penelope, saying, you know, he told the blondes to leave before he attacked them, and then Miro and Pillman got into it, and they booked Miro and Pillman for the TNT title Saturday as well.
Okay.
So at the end, it was Matt Jackson, the Good Brothers, against Eddie Kingston, Penta, and Frankie Kazarian. Nick Jackson was not at ringside to begin the match. He came in at the very end. Callis was on commentary. This was
still have
okay.
The hair and beard?
I couldn't tell. He had a hat on.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure he does. So so this was cool. So like I like the team of Kingston, Penta, and Frankie because they're all kind of badasses from all different worlds, kind of. Frankie is like got new gear. He's wearing pants now. It's funny because people have been calling him, like, since Moxley's not around right now, he's essentially just playing Moxley now, which is fucking hilarious. Yeah, so you know, this was all right. This was like,
he called himself what, the Elite Killer?
He's the Elite Hunter.
The Elite Hunter. Okay. The Elite Hunter. Okay.
So there was a couple good hot tags. Frankie did a good hot tag here. Matt Jackson was carrying his side. Carl Anderson was pretty good too. Nothing really about Gallows too much in this match. What a shock. But they ended up, Nick Jackson ran out. He caught Pentagon with the aerosol can, sprayed him, and then Anderson hit the top rope stun gun for the win. So Carl Anderson with the win, and then we go off the air with
who'd he pin?
Nick. He pinned Pentagon. So we go off the air with you know, everybody standing tall at the top, the Bucks and Good Brothers and Callis. I was like, huh, okay.
All right.
So MJ Gov and Sammy Guevara's Wednesday, the first Wednesday show back.
Okay. Okay, so that's okay. All right. They'll put Pentagon and Phoenix in the main event, but they damn sure gonna beat them. It's wild. That's always gonna irritate me. Oh, it's always gonna irritate me. Like, can they at least win one? Something that even resembles a big match. all right. Is that the end of the show?
I think it is. All right. Unless there's like, you know, Big Dave gave Tommy and Shuri a 5.5.
Oh,
you know?
Shit. That. Yeah. Yeah. 5.5 stars. Word is this is the first time Meltzer's given a women's match 5 stars or better since 1995, which is just like, okay. I'm not exactly like the greatest Joshi historian in the world, but like, there have been some great fucking matches, namely for Mako Satomura over the last 25 years. Just might want to, you know, might have wanted to have watched those, maybe, just maybe. Yes, yeah, really strange. I don't know, man. Like, obviously, this is gonna get a lot of eyes for Stardom from Western fans. It definitely came in time with them having the English feed.
My only regret is that B previously wasn't in the match at this point. Now I need the full synergy from, you know, where there's a white person involved, so like the Joshi gatekeepers could be furious about it, and God. We need that dynamic in this.
I'm trying to think like who would have to be in the match for B Priest to have a 5-star match with someone. I'm trying to think of how what level of wrestler this person would have to be, because she had a 4-star match with Will Ospreay, so I don't know. It might only be Kenny and Shingo at this point. but it's really it's cool. I don't think it's a five. I didn't write it down as a 5-star match. I think if it had a finish, I may have gone 5 stars with it. But I don't know. It's really weird. Like, I don't think it's the greatest Stardom match ever, but whatever. Like, and the funny thing is, like, the match that he's only given 4.5 to. Just like, what? Like, he gave one of those Mayu and EO matches from 2016-17 4.5. And I watched that match. I'm like, nah, bro. That ain't no 4.5 star match. that's at least 4.75. But, yeah, man, it's cool with the hell of a promotion, but I hope get more eyes to, you know, hardcore fans. Like, cause he, like, it's not even just the 5.5 that he gave the match. It's like the rest of that card, he have a lot of, like, I think he gave like every match like 3 or 3. He gave like every match like 3.5 or something like that.
Yeah, he gave a couple 4s too, I think.
Yeah, he gave
the Cinderella final, he gave 4.
I gave that 4 flat as well. I think he gave like there's something else he gave, something way higher than I gave. I think he gave like the first the semifinal match between Himeka and Kamatani like 3.75. And I was like, nah, that's not that bad. That's not that one that good. But yeah, he really liked that pay per view. I'm sure. So we'll see how that goes in the future or whatever else. Stardom actually retweeted. Tweet for our podcast last week talking about the pay per view in that match. So I that was kind of cool. Like Jeremy was telling us that like he's wondering why like the account blew up as far as likes and retweets. But
yeah, yeah. Man, so we all that are back this week. Nah, we ain't talking about no.
He's talking about some bullshit. Well, I mean, there's nothing to talk about right now. Like, look, we do this show on Sundays and Mondays. The show's on tape delay. There was these Road 2 shows. Like, the shows got out today. Like, I wasn't able to watch them. Like, we'll recap them next show.
So y'all can get to know James before he's doing English commentary for Stardom World.
Yeah.
So
can you imagine how bad I'd be doing live commentary for wrestling? Oh my God, that'd be awesome. I'd be awful.
Oh man, you can do it. Can't be that hard.
I think it's a lot harder than people give it credit for being.
You know, I just need to give you some Fire Pro matches and you go ahead and practice on those. You know,
practice on like I'm trying to think of like what I don't even know what I would watch to practice that kind of stuff. But whatever, it doesn't even matter. It's not happening. Well, I'm going on this hypothetical with you. It's ridiculous. Let's get out of here, man. That's the end of the show. Thanks for listening, y'all. Be sure to rate us whatever app you're using to listen to this podcast with. 5 stars. Go to Pro Wrestling
Tees. Y'all didn't let us win. Like I'm kind of disappointed in the Nation Knights.
He's still this nation. That's the reason why you call us Nation. You call them Nation Knights. What is that?
You know, what should I call them? Nationals? You know?
Nationalists?
Yeah. you know. Can't believe y'all let us down. What was it? What y'all ain't like?
I don't know, man. I don't know. We might have, we may have, you know, gone too far away from the main roster. I don't know.
Too many good matches? You know, maybe. Is that it?
Yeah, keep in mind, like, some of the people, like, just picked it based off just the super talented and, like, you know, talent and also relative push to the company, to companies they're in. Like, yeah, we understand Ricochet's one of the top 25, 30 best talents in the world when it comes to pro wrestling, but, like, Buddy on Main Event. That's, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
Like, it's easy to forget how good a lot of people are. So, I think we should take that. I think I'll try to remember that when we go into next year and we do the draft. It's like, got to kind of remember, like, this person ain't really getting pushed or done anything all that compelling in a while or whatever else. I think next year we might have to rethink what we do with drafting so many Joshi. So I'm just saying that we can just let it be okay with the draft and getting away with like a Rhea Ripley and the Thunder Rosa and it'll be okay. Like we might just need a flat out woman star, or a top woman star on the state side, and then you know worry about like the Joshi thing for the second match on the card or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, it's crazy. We drafted Shuri and she like has a match that has five and a half stars and it's like oh. We're like finished third in the fucking thing. It's like, okay, whatever. Yeah, we know what we were doing. Anyway, hit up the Red Circle. Drop us off with a donation. Also, be sure to go to prowrestlingtees.com/social suplex and pick up some official Social Suplex Network merchandise. Also, listen to the other shows on the network. Like this show, One Nation Radio. You have Keep It a Strong Style. You have Grumman Wash's shit, Ricky and Clyde's wrestling podcast actually on hiatus for now, but when it comes back, we'll be sure to plug it. Well, we just kind of already did, but whatever. The Grave Consequences podcast, 8-Bit Suplex, All Things Elite, and Great Match. Thanks for listening, y'all. Later.
One more thing. Okay. If y'all ever feeling like Ben Simmons, don't.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.